Hello, everyone. Before we begin this episode of Latvia Weekly, Otto and I would like to just remind everyone to please stay safe this winter, because unfortunately, one story which we're going to be talking about is how 17 people have already died falling through the ice this year. And just because you see other people standing on the ice or maybe even driving across the ice, it doesn't mean that you should do it, because you do not know how thick the ice is or if there is a current or many other factors. So please stay safe. When in doubt, don't go on the ice. Latvia Weekly, your independent guide to the news in Latvia, with your hosts, Otto Tabuns and Joe Horgan. Labdien visiem, and welcome to episode number 114 of the Latvia Weekly podcast. I am Joe Horgan, your Jelgava host, and my Riga host with the most, Otto Tabuns, is... Well, joining me from Riga, as I already said. Otto, yeah. How are you today?
Hello, Joe. Hello, dear listeners. It's a wonderful day in Riga. The sun is shining, even though it's cold, so it gives us a little bit more optimism than usual.
Definitely, yes. We don't have Groundhog Day, thankfully, in Latvia, which is one of the stupidest American traditions that we do. But if we did have a Groundhog Day, I would say that the poor... tortured animal would have seen his shadow probably and hid for six more weeks of winter, because we have been in a kind of permanent freeze. My car is still kind of like frozen to place. I'm actually kind of worried. I have to turn it on actually, because I'm worried that everything's going to get frozen completely out. But actually, I remember there was some snow that fell into my car, because I've been using my car now as basically a garage, because, you know, we live in the fourth floor of an apartment. We don't have an elevator, so we keep the kids' strollers in there. And, you know, some snow has kind of fallen, you know, into the back seat of the car. And this was like 2 weeks ago already or something. But every time I open up the door to get the stroller out, the snow's still there. So it hasn't melted in this entire time. Which I'm, you know, on one hand, I'm glad about, because then, you know, when it finally does melt, I'm going to have to, you know, do some major cleaning. I don't know, Otto, how much snow is too much for you?
Well, having been born in this country, probably none. You know, that's something that we are used to it. We live with it, and that's that.
You know, I do have some colleagues, though, who have also lived here their entire lives. And are completely fed up and miserable. And, you know, since I'm somebody who loves the winter, they complain to me as if this is my fault somehow. So,
Well, perhaps they prefer fancy shoes, because, of course, that's very difficult to have, especially if you have the combination of snow and salt on the street.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of cold-feeted people around here. But we are not here to talk about the weather. We are here, as usual, to take a look through the news that happened this week in Latvia and try to discuss it in a interesting and hopefully helpful way for those of you who are interested in knowing what's happening here in Latvia, for those of you who live here, or for those of you who live abroad but care deeply about this country. And to begin with, as we have for the last coming up on a year now, our major story is once again the COVID-19 pandemic, and a few very interesting updates here. So first of all, one very big development this week is that seniors over the age of 70 are beginning to get vaccines. Okay, so this is specifically senior citizens over the age of 70. And according to at least the story that Leta, the Latvian news agency, kind of similar to, you know, in America we have the Associated Press or Thomas Reuters, so that's around 187,000 inhabitants, which is a significant portion of the population, because Latvia does have, you know, as whenever it's a slow news week, which it hasn't been for a long time thanks to COVID, there's always some kind of story about Latvia's aging population. population. Well, this is a huge, you know, effect of this is that we do have a huge percentage of the population that is over the age of 70 and in need of this vaccine auto. So what's the latest developments here?
So this will be a great test for the vaccination plan that has been established by the Ministry of Health, as we are indeed talking about approximately 10% of the national population. And of course, it will be the question of how many of them will volunteer to do so, because it's, of course, not mandatory for them. But the sheer number of people in question will certainly make it a challenging task for the vaccination office.
Definitely. And as we discussed last week and the week before, there is the monavaccina.lv portal, which you can use to pretty easily at this point sign up for the vaccination. You know, we talked about there was a few people who had some problems with it at the very, very beginning, but nothing like some of the other online systems, which we've detailed in previous episodes, which have not been so smooth in terms of their rollout. And some very, very good news for people who do not have the highest Latvian language skills, but still want to get vaccinated. So it is now available in Russian language, and hopefully by the time you're listening to this episode, it'll also be available in English as well. That is planned for any time now, the next couple of days, apparently, according to the health ministry. So for those of you who you can't figure out Google Translate or haven't learned Latvian yet, that should be helpful for you as well. Another very, very big news when it comes to the COVID-19 response here in Latvia. This is something that's been talked about in the past. I'm actually not even sure, Otto, if we've talked about it on the show before. I think we might have mentioned it in passing, because it was something that was, you know, kind of being discussed on the side, and it happened pretty quickly in terms of it actually being put into practice. But the plan to make a one-time benefit, a one-time payment for families per child, is going to be pursued by the government. So this initially, if I remember correctly, you might have to correct me, Otto, I believe that this was initially a initiative of the National Opvienība, or the National Alliance Party, which I think will be very helpful for them eventually when the next election comes around, because they'll have something very concrete to talk about. But this is something that is now in the works. It's being worked on by the government, and there is also some other benefits being considered as well by the cabinet of ministers. So, Otto, can you tell us a little bit about this decision?
So there were a number of politicians and political forces who considered and mentioned the idea of supporting families with children, but specifically this current proposal is exactly the one that the National Alliance put forward. That goes very well together with their narratives of protecting families and fostering the welfare of children. At the same time, there was a big discussion about this in the coalition, and we saw a lot of criticism being railed against the Minister of Finance, who was initially skeptical against this. As no surprise, he is the one who has to guard the budget and be the one who tries to avoid additional spending. At the same time, the political pressure was too large to ignore. As a result, this went forward, and the coalition did agree to actually start with families with children who would receive 500 euros a one-time benefit for each child. I think that it does respond to the issues that many families must have with regard to different additional stresses associated with the COVID restrictions and the education at home, and these restrictions to certain professions. At the same time, if we talk of more in terms of political capital, I think this has been a bit more fruitful way where to direct the discussion about family values and other issues, because as we have seen, the matter of the constitutional court decision and issues associated with that have almost completely left the top of the agenda, with the National Alliance looking in another direction that would be probably more likely to be successful.
Well, yes, because, I mean, you know, obviously feeding your family is always going to be a higher, you know, higher priority for most people, you know, than worrying about what's going on in other families and whether or not that's something you want happening, you know, in this country, for example. So I guess this would be not to all opinion, but putting their, literally putting their money where their mouth is, or at least, well, taxpayer money where their mouth is on this one. So now for American listeners, you know, and also, I mean, listeners from a number of other countries as well, but I'm just mentioning America because, well, I am American, and you know, I heard a lot about this, you know, from Americans who were living here in Latvia. It was a little bit chaotic in terms of getting America's stimulus because, you know, for example, a lot of people literally receive them as checks, which, you know, for Americans living in Latvia who get sent a, you know, like a check, you literally can't do anything with it in Latvia, because in America, we still use the ancient Stone Age system of checks where you write an amount on a piece of paper and you take it and people believe that there's that amount of money in your bank account and you, quote unquote, cash it. You know, so we don't have that system here in Latvia. I mean, pretty much everything is via bank transfers, direct deposits. But how Otto, do you think that they'll actually get this money out to people? Will people have to go and claim it, or is it just going to be sent to people's bank accounts? I mean, how can you imagine the process of this will go? Because we don't, I mean, I don't know if there has been a precedent for this in recent times.
I think that it could follow partially with the information that the state already has, because we do have the maternity and paternity benefits, and they are associated with this specific children who are registered with their parents, meaning that the parents receive that because among the state archives it is registered that they are related and are eligible for this. So perhaps it for those who are already receiving these child benefits, the ones that parents get to, I think, to the time when the children are, I think, several years old. I think it could be perhaps the same system or the same way. For example, if they already received the benefit to their bank account, then they could also receive this specific benefit to the same bank account. In other cases, it could be the case that it will be either this electronic public service or that will be considered, for example, via the portal latvia.lv, which has electronic services, and so then it would be possible to apply by writing this electronic application with electronic signature, which is possible, or perhaps another way, depending on the municipality and the local infrastructure in place.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see how this gets rolled out, because again, like I said, it has been you know, chaotic in certain other countries. Hopefully, it will be as simple here as, you know, claiming maternity benefits or things like that, because it actually has been, you know, at least in my experience, pretty easy if you know how the system works. However, if you are you know, not a local here, or if you are not, you know, kind of sharing a family with a local from here, it can be a little bit tricky to figure out exactly how the system works, and how you know, to sign up for different things. So, you know, as always, if any of you need any advice or guidance, then you can always write to us, and we can point you in the correct direction of where to go to be able to do this, because you do, you know, want to be able to claim these benefits, because I think this will help everyone in this time. I mean, you know, it's a very, very difficult time for just about everyone, even people who you know, who do have steady income, who are lucky enough to have steady income in this time. So, some other important developments. Daniels Pavlots, who is the health minister of Latvia, who, by the way, is currently, at least as of the time of recording, as far as I know, in self-isolation because he was apparently in contact with a worker, I guess, who tested positive for COVID-19. So he is currently working from isolation. He announced that there could be some changes in restrictions for different sectors, which would be taking would go into effect at the beginning of March. Okay, which, you know, sounds like it's a long time away, but you do have to remember that February is a short month. We're already on the 18th of February, so basically that's 10 days away. Can you believe we're 10 days away from March, Otto?
You know, the flow of time has completely changed in my perception, and I think it is also the case for many of our listeners, but certainly that's good news to hear.
Yeah, so I mean, that's less than 2 weeks away, but you know, still,
yes.
You know, time passes slowly in COVID land, unfortunately. So apparently, specifically the personal care, you know, beauty sector would be this is a sector that has been very unhappy with these regulations for very good reasons. I mean, they've been, you know, they were some of the first to be affected, and have not, had an easy time through this for reasons that Otto and I got into last time, you know, especially with people who, are straddling the line between the gray economy and, other instances. So, Otto, how would this work? So what would be the decision-making process rolling back some of the restrictions from the beginning of March? What are some of the indicators that the ministry would be looking for?
For example, in the sector of personal care, here we could perhaps see the requirement to have a additionally safeguarded working environment, meaning that there are these separations, either in the sense of these plastic sheets or some other some other items that would separate, let's say, this one place where the personal care is provided from another one. Then also it could be the matter of increasing the intervals between appointments. For example, requiring the hairdressers to have, let's say, 20 minutes between appointments, so that it would be possible to ventilate the room or the premises they work in, and also to give enough time to disinfect the premises and facilities before the next client arrives. So it could be this a compromise between this necessity dictated by public health and the tragic situation that many of these people are in, if we talk in the sense of the job security and income.
And this is something we actually haven't really talked about yet, because it just doesn't come up for some reason in our last couple of episodes. But so the government keeps talking about this Luxafora Principes. So our word of the day, which is a lot of words in Latvian are very similar to words in English or other languages. But one word which does not sound anything like the word in English is Luxafores, which is traffic light. And I still don't understand what Luxafor is there another language nearby where they use Luxafor as well, because I have no idea where that comes from.
Well, I'm not sure, but you know, the lux, of course, it's a mix of Latin and Greek. So the lux stands for light, and the phoros is something that carries the light. So it of course, was not in the same meaning if we talk about the ancient Greek or Roman times, but that's the way how to describe something that in Latvian you would not have a name for it.
I had no idea. So that is the thing I learned today. I had no idea that came from Greek or Latin, because I am completely incompetent in both, aside from, like, the, you know, I have to teach some roots and prefixes and everything once in a while, but I didn't realize that. But that makes sense. So
yeah, well, for those of our listeners who might have studied additional physics in high school, they might remember, like, lux as one of the indicators when measuring light. So that may help.
Lumen. Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, the point we're trying to get to, in a very roundabout way, is that there is this luxophore principle, or traffic light principle, and this is an infographic that's been going around and something that's been cited by the government. Basically, their plan is, and it doesn't really work as a traffic light, because there's actually four colors. So there's very dark red, which is Lotti Augsrisks, or very high risk, which is within 14 days, an average of more than 200 new cases per 100,000 inhabitants, which unfortunately we are pretty high above that right now throughout the country. But then there's Augsrisks, or high risk, which is just like a normal red, which is lower than 200 per 100,000 average over 14 days. There's Vidius risks, or medium risk, which is less than 100 per 100,000 over 14 days. And then the low risk, Zemrisks, or the green light, is lower than 20 over 14 days, which... do you remember those days, Otto, back in the summer when that was where we were? You know, we were nowhere near that, actually, for most of the summer.
Yeah, that's right. But it is interesting the way how this has been formulated. I perhaps could, like, criticize it a little bit, because, you know, like, there have been some questions on the way how the health sector has communicated, meaning the Ministry of Health. And here, I could understand the motivation to do this, but it makes it just more complex than perhaps necessary, in a way, to say that, well, you would have the three lights in the street light at the same time. Well, you know, you have this good, average, and bad situation, but our situation is beyond that, so we have to have the dark red.
If you take a look at this, I'm sorry to cut you off for a second, but, like, the red is just, like, slightly darker. It's not even, like, you know, like, it's a fluorescent, you know, really light red, and then, or, you know, really darker. It's like two shades darker or something. Like, you know, I don't know. You know, what would you have suggested, Otto, from a design perspective?
Well, just stay with the three colors, like, what to, because I think they might have just figured it out that, well, if we have, like, two reds, then if we get to the lighter red, we would still have this leeway to keep the restrictions, and we would have additional time for maneuvers and additional time for, let's say, not taking any strict action. At the same time, it just makes this type of communication more difficult to perceive,
yeah,
at least in my mind.
This is the kind of thing that is directly related to our first domestic story, which we'll get to in a little bit, just as a little preview. But yeah, so basically they're following this, you know, indicators, this green, yellow, red, and very dark red traffic light indicators, based on how many new cases there are. And since we're in the very high, the dark red right now, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to, you know, open as much as the government would like. But hopefully by March, there will be a, we'll only be in the normal red, I guess, which is, it's never good to be in the red.
Yes, and that will also certainly depend on the ability of the government to increase the rate of vaccination. So we are waiting.
Yes, certainly. And actually, speaking of this traffic light principle, though, so there is a there is a talk that for certain municipalities which are in the red instead of the very dark red, that they might be able to start opening up first and second grades. Okay, so these would be you know, municipalities where there's only 150 per 100,000 cases over 2 weeks, average over 2 weeks. So they would be able to start full-time studies with first and second grade, which is, you know, again, a much less ambitious and bold plan than had been proposed previously. I mean, there was talk in January that perhaps all first and second grade could go back to school, because, you know, as anybody who is a parent of a first or second grader knows, you know, it's very difficult to do meaningful distance learning with those age groups. So it's nice to see that this is a possibility, but we'll have to see which municipalities will be able to do this. We will keep an eye on this. Do you see this happening? Do you see this going through, Otto?
Well, I think that it will, because it has been one of the biggest problems associated with this, the access and quality of education during the time of these restrictions. So they will have to find a compromise. Hopefully it will not make the situation worse, but perhaps it would be possible to start with that and see how it is manageable at this level, and then perhaps that could open the way for other parts of the educational sector.
Yes, certainly. And actually, just before, I mean, that just about does it for our COVID updates. But one thing which we forgot to mention, so you guys know, we are recording this Thursday afternoon on the 18th. So it's about 2:30 right now. But the last couple of days, the numbers are looking a little bit more positive, or you could say less positive too, less COVID positive, less positive cases. So today, it was announced that there were 708 new cases. The day before, there was, I believe, 946. The day before that, 713. And then the day before that, just 278. And the day before that, 400. 424. So, you know, again, these aren't great numbers, certainly, but it does slowly seem to be trending towards downwards. So let's hope that it stays that way, because it is not necessarily written in the stars, certainly, that it will continue to do that. So we all have to continue being smart, being safe, and just doing what we can to get back to that normal situation where we could have a green light, where we're not stuck at the traffic light. This is like being stuck, if you've ever driven on roads during construction, they have these traffic lights instead of flag people, in your construction zone, that sometimes you have to wait 2 or 3 minutes. It feels like one of those traffic lights where you just wait and wait and wait and wait. So let's hope we see a green light pretty soon. So any last things you want to say about COVID, Otto?
No.
Well, speaking of actions by the government, and when I say the word government, I'm specifically talking about the Cabinet of Ministers, because as a reminder, for those of you who come from non-parliamentary systems, especially coming from America, when you hear about like a government falling, for example, it sounds very dramatic. It sounds like, Olympus has fallen, or one of those cheesy action movies. Specifically, usually in Europe and in other parliamentary systems, when we talk about a government, we're talking about the cabinet. We're talking about the ministers who answer to the prime minister, who answers to the parliament, or really, I mean, the ministers all answer to parliament at the end of the day, really.
Mm-hmm. And at the end, if you talk about the cabinet, it could be any cabinet if you say it in Latvian, but in Latvian, when we refer to the cabinet, we usually use the term valdība, which is directly translated as government.
It's very confusing to me too, because cabinets can also just be like a room as well. Mm-hmm. So people ask, oh, which cabinet are you in? Because they'll directly translate into English, and I'll always think it's very funny because like a cabinet's like a wardrobe or something. So I think like, well, my room's not that small. Anyway, one thing that is very small though is the current cabinet's popularity. And it is apparently a record low, according to the polling data SKDS, who's done this. Is that correct, Otto? This is actually the lowest it's been?
Yes, for this government, yes.
Yes. So I have to imagine, what was SKDS around during the 2008 financial crisis?
Oh, yes, I think it has been around for more than that.
Okay. If I had to put money, I'm not a betting man, but I would have to bet that was just around the lowest that it's probably gotten, because it was a bad situation back then. But right now, it's not good. It's not good for the government, and specifically communication, like you mentioned, Otto. Things like this, confusing traffic light system, which doesn't actually have three colors, or just things like being able to understand especially earlier in this fight against COVID. What the restrictions actually are, what the point of the restrictions is, why certain, the biggest criticism I, hear from people just, out in the general public is, why are you allowed to buy toothpaste, but you're not allowed to buy something else, in the same aisle. So a lot of criticism of these kinds of measures and not a lot of clear explanations always for why these decisions are in place, and then a quick move to other decisions. So, at the end of the day, I can't imagine what the government could really do to be very popular right now, because for people who think that we need to have very, very strict regulation. I hear from some people who say that, we should have done a complete lockdown at the very beginning, and then that would have solved this problem. Or I hear from a lot of people who just, might go as extreme as believing that the virus isn't even a real problem, who think that, or a less radical version of that would just be that the closure of the economy is a much bigger problem than the virus itself. But the government has seemed to this entire time kind of toe, this middle position where they're trying to keep things open for as long as possible, but they're also trying to, do a bunch of the restrictions as well. And it seems like the result is that pretty much nobody is happy except for this very low percentage of people, which seems to be, maybe people in the government and people related to them. So what's your take on this, Otto, as a much more clever political scientist than I am?
Well, in my observations, I would say that for any government that would be in its place currently, it would be a very difficult time, should it be one led by Prime Minister Karinc, or should it be in most other combinations that would be possible. So it's not an easy task, and it has fell upon this Prime Minister and this cabinet to do it. There have been several lapses in judgment. There have been issues. At the Ministry of Health, there have been major issues in planning and administering, and that was one of the reasons why the Minister of Health had to resign. There was also a matter of how this was also managed during the time when the situation seemed to become better over the summer and in early autumn. So where were the responsible people then? At the same time, it is, of course, a situation that we have not had for many years. I think a pandemic like this hit our country last time, probably a century ago, if we talk about Spanish flu. So it is indeed something that the government and the responsible services have been probably prepared on paper, but have not practiced that because there has not been such an issue before. At the same time, it will be a lot of tough questions, especially if you remember some of the claims and some of the policies that we heard before the crisis started with regard to the budget increasing, with regard to the development, with Latvia joining international organizations, that shows our level of development. So if we are doing that well, then that should also be this responsibility of government to make sure that it is kept that way. And that is, of course, the responsibility of the politicians and the civil servants who have to follow the laws and the decisions that the politicians take.
You know, Otto, one very interesting thing to me about this whole situation, you know, we talked a lot about, so before, you know, right when the show was starting, when we were talking about the you know, coalition talks, and you know, we didn't know who the next prime minister would be, for example, you know, we were talking a lot about just how often there are you know, changes in government in Latvia, specifically since 1990, since the reestablishment of democracy and the Latvian constitution, and you know, we were, you know, making predictions about how long this coalition would last, given the fact that it has so many different, you know, five different parties in it that do not see eye to eye on just about anything. And one of those parties, you know, Autisti by Par, has basically, you know, more or less, you know, not quite divorced, I would say, but, you know, are not in the same bedroom at this point anymore, you know, especially like on a regional level.
So another episode for possibly divorce court, you know.
Oh yes, and yeah. Well, that's a whole different issue, which we'll get into some other time. But basically, what I'm trying to get to right now is, you know, you would expect that a government like that, the people were expecting would collapse at some point anyway, just over personal disagreements, you know, wouldn't be able to weather a massive crisis like this, you know, where there are so many difficult decisions that have to be made and, you know, so much flack that is taken, and that, you know, knives wouldn't go out. So what do you chalk it up to? Because, you know, I think at the beginning of this, you know, people would have expected, or a lot of people would have expected at least, that the government wouldn't have survived this long. And really right now, I mean, there's no clear sign that there is any immediate danger of the government falling. And you know, I mean, I think the most likely scenario would have been with the firing of Minister Ilze Vintele, you know, a couple of, or like a month and a half ago now at this point. That didn't happen. How do you see this? I mean, do you see this basically as just, you know, the parties knowing that this is a very serious situation, that this just isn't time for the kind of political theater that maybe, you know, in a more stable time that they'd be more willing to do? Is it just that they're worried that they could end up being the loser if they you know, press the reset button? I mean, how do you see the situation?
You know, even though the political situation of the Prime Minister is not the best one, if we talk about the power of their faction in terms of numbers and in terms of the ability to, let's say, dictate the direction where everything is going, you would still have the hesitation from other parties not to break what would be very difficult to fix, and they would also remember that any other person who would become the prime minister would automatically get ratings hit downwards, because we can already see that with Minister Pavlyuts, even though there has been a number of positive statements with regard to this and positive expectations, you see there is already the questions about the validity and usefulness of the vaccination office, about the rate of vaccination, about other issues. So the issues do not go away with the change of the minister, and this initial expectations and enthusiasm will clearly fade away, and we will do so much faster in this situation. So probably, to use the term, after looking out of the window, I think the parties will try to winter it out, and you know, try to wait for this COVID situation to pass before looking at rearranging the political situation. Well, we also have to remember that the municipal election is coming up. So I would say that if one of the coalition parties would be seen or identified as actively bringing down the government at this time, that would certainly not help at the municipal election. It would be a very good narrative for the other parties to talk them down.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens in these municipal elections because, okay, so Riga's election already happened. I mean, that's already clear, and you know, we already know the results of that. But in a lot of the other cities throughout the country, you know, for example, Jelgava, Ventspils, you know, Daugavpils, a lot of these are strongholds of opposition parties like ZZS, the Union of Greens and Farmers, and Saskinya. So, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I think they're going to do well. You know, Jermala as well, you know, like had a ZZS Saskinya, you know, coalition for some time. I think that these parties, you know, since they're incumbent already, and, you know, I think they're going to do well anyway, but it'll be interesting to see if maybe there's a boost even from being in opposition, from not having to make these very difficult decisions that, you know, a minister of health or a minister of finance or the prime minister would have to make. So yeah, I can't wait to see what happens in this municipal election. And then also, I just want to mention, just to be precise, so before the current government, the average length of a cabinet in Latvia since 1990 was just 16 months. So Kristijonas Kariņš has almost gotten to 25 months already. So so he's already done better than average. So there's at least that. So anyway, speaking of ministers who are no longer ministers or people who have actually left the government, so Juris Puce, who was at one point probably the most, you know, noteworthy or maybe even powerful minister besides Mr. Kariņš himself. He was the Minister of Environmental Protection and Regional Development. He was in charge of, well, the major decision to let go of Mayor Neils Ušakovs, or basically block him from being able to do his work while there was a ongoing investigation. You know, eventually Neils Ušakovs, he ran for European Parliament, and you know, you can hear a lot more about that story in previous Latvia Weekly episodes. But he has been fined in a parking space scandal that brought down not only Mr. Puce, but, you know, as we mentioned, Latvijas Attīstībai and Kustība Par, they had been having some issues previously, and it seems like this Puce parking scandal has definitely exacerbated that quite a bit. So Otto, can you comment on the latest with this situation?
Yes. So the case with regard to this unauthorized usage of this parking pass and then lying about it indeed went through, and the Corruption Prevention Bureau, who is in charge of dealing with matters like these involving officials, has decided to fine former Minister Puce, as well as two other officials from the Riga City Council in connection with this. So we see that this action and this lack of validity for this action has been confirmed. So that the Corruption Prevention Office has found that there has been a violation. And well, for many people, this will stay associated with the image, because I think it is a major issue for the party, and they will have to work hard to get over it and to find other ways and other leaders to get back to their previous popularity. One thing that we have already seen is that they have trying very actively to work with their regional sections and they will probably try to get back what they lost in Riga in other municipalities, as they are still quite well funded. They have other non-parliamentary leaders who are active in fundraising, and they would have at least resources for sure to try to make their difference on the new administrative map.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an uphill battle for them, though, because just, you know, looking at the history of political parties in Latvia, you know, we talked just a minute ago about the governments changing very rapidly. You know, there was a very unstable period in the 90s and 2000s where, you know, governments would change rapidly. But political parties don't last that long either. I mean, one of my favorite statistics I love to pull out, which those of you who've listened to the show for a long time are sick of hearing, but there isn't a single party or faction really that ran in the 1998 national election that still exists in its current formation today, because they combine together, they split apart, they, you know, somebody goes off and creates a new party. There are many precedents of these parties that are very successful for a short amount of time and then disappear or get absorbed by another party. So that's going to be, I think, pretty tricky for them. But mm-hmm. we'll have to see what happens there. But Mr. Putse's successor, Mr. Arturs Toms Pleš, so also from Latvijas Attīstībai, I believe, if I am correct. So he is the new Minister of Environmental Protection and Regional Development, and he has announced that this new draft law on local governments is aiming to involve residents more in their local governments. And I just want to be clear, Otto, this law, this specific law that's being discussed, is separate from the regional reform law, which was already approved. Is that correct?
That is right, because whereas the administratively territorial reform deals with the administrative borders and the amount of municipalities, then this law on municipalities and the proposed amendments would deal with specifically this popular participation in the decision making, especially at the local level, so that it would not be just this one case in the political cycle where you would just have the election, but also the other aspects of communicating and representing the interests of the local people in the municipality, including the matters of open competitions and also the participation and consultation with inhabitants when deciding on certain aspects of municipal budget, for example, in terms of the development of territories.
And one piece of good news for Latvia's farmers, so not Latvia's farmer party, but for Latvia's actual farmers. So apparently 2020 was the best year in Latvian history for grain harvest, which is a very welcome news considering what happened the last couple of years. There were some very bad years for Latvia's farmers, first due to floods, then droughts, and then another flood and a drought. And but apparently 2020 was a good year. Shout out, by the way, to Keen, who is one of our Facebook page helpers. Him and Andrew are starting up the Stories of the Day again, and he brought that story to our attention. So thank you. Actually, he brought a couple of these stories to our attention as well. So thank you, Keen, for your awesome work. Otto, is that it for domestic stories? Can we move on?
Oh, let's do that.
Okay, so now, Otto, I'm going to let you take things over with the international story, since I know that is your speciality. And can you tell us a little bit about Estonia's visit to Latvia, specifically Estonia's Minister of Foreign Affairs? What did they discuss?
That's right. For the Baltic foreign ministers and also for the presidents, it is usually the tradition to visit one of their Baltic neighbors as their first foreign visit. And in the case of the Estonian new foreign minister, this has been the case with Latvia, which she visited. And they, of course, discussed a number of issues of common interest, such as the relationship between the EU and Russia and Belarus, which is, of course, important to both Latvia and Estonia, but something that could be perhaps even more relevant to the day-to-day lives of many of our listeners is the matter of the initiative that the Estonians raised of perhaps reinstating the Baltic travel bubble by establishing a joint COVID pass. So, with regard to the inhabitants who have been vaccinated, so that they would have the right to avoid these restrictions and travel between Latvia and Estonia, perhaps also including Lithuania. So, that is a very interesting development, and perhaps something that we could see actually materializing once the numbers of vaccination in all of the involved countries would increase.
Yeah, and for those of you who weren't here this summer, I mean, you kind of described it just a second ago, but this Baltic bubble was this basically travel zone where you could travel, you know, without having to prove a COVID pass or something like that, or self isolate between Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, which unfortunately, like most bubbles, eventually popped. That is not the case anymore. You cannot. There's lots of questions, for example, on the expats in Latvia Facebook group, saying, you know, can I drive from this country here without having to self isolate? The answer in general is no. That is something that is required due to the situation throughout Europe and the world. But let's hope that the situation gets a little bit better. I mean, you know, I know that the effect of sun and warmth ended up being a little bit overrated in terms of fighting the virus, but hopefully I don't know, spring will have some kind of healing principles, and we will I don't know, somehow that will help.
Well, yeah, I think sun, of course, is a very good additional sun. Will certainly benefit mental health. As we know, this has been an issue for many people who have to stay at home all the time, who also work from home. We have long periods of a dark time in our country. So I think this will help to partially solve some of the situations that have become much more acute in this time.
Yes, and speaking of dark times and acute situations, the situation next door with Alexander Navalny is not developing in a very positive way, according to the European Court for Human Rights. Tell us, what was their take on the current situation in Russia, Otto?
Now the representatives of Mr. Navalny appealed to the European Court of Human Rights, as we know, one of the cases Mr. Navalny was tried for in Russia, it was appealed all the way to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, and the European Court decided that the case that was that Mr. Navalny was tried for in Russia did not follow the due process requirements, meaning that he was not given a fair trial. As a result, this conviction should not stand. This is something that the Russian government disagrees with. At the same time, the lawyer of Mr. Navalny appealed to the European Court, and it has made a decision based on its right to ask for temporary measures to release Navalny, as the reason why Mr. Navalny is currently arrested is connected to this decision in the case that the European Court found as invalid. So that decision should not stand, and following the decision of the European Court, this suspended sentence should not have been turned into real sentence, because there should not have been any suspended sentence in the first place. So we see this situation going to the next level, and we will see what will be the reaction, because the Russian government already announced that they see no grounds to follow this request from the European Court of Human Rights. And I think this will be a cause for additional problems, perhaps also a reason for additional sanctions, because Russia, similarly to many other European states, are the members of Council of Europe, under which the European Court of Human Rights works. So we will see how this will go on, because there is this international obligation that all of the members of the Council of Europe have agreed to, and Russia seems to be violating that, and I do not see really a way for further sanctions or reaction from the European side to be avoided.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, this is not the first time that Russia has ignored, decisions by the European Court of Human Rights. I mean, you know, especially when it comes to issues like LGBT rights, there's been a number of instances previously where they were ignoring these decisions or took great issue with them. But let's.
Yeah, well, you are right. At the same time, this will certainly require a response, and perhaps it may also have political implications with regard to the voting rights or membership of Russia in the Council of Europe, or with regard to the EU decision on further sanctions against Russia in connection with this.
Yeah, and by the way, just a quick thing. I mean, the Council of Europe is something completely different from the European Union. So the European Union is the zone of free trade, and also agreements between the member states. The Council of Europe is something much wider, which there's far more members of, and it is a much looser agreement. So, for example, they agree on a number of international standards, and they do have the European Court of Human Rights and the Court of Justice. Actually, Otto, I can't remember off the top of my head. Is the European Court of Justice also under the Council of Europe?
No, that is the highest court for the European Union.
Okay.
For the Council of Europe, you have the European Convention on Human Rights, which the members of the Council of Europe are parties to. So that also includes this right to fair trial and other rights, and this dispute with regard to the possible violations of this European Convention of Human Rights are adjudicated by the European Court of Human Rights.
So Brexit did not mean Brexit from the Council of Europe, only the European Union, but maybe we'll see Rexit, in the future due to this issue. So, and then Otto, there's some tragic history, but then also some very happy history that we can look back on this week.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. So if we look at this week in history, then we have to start with February 16th of 1976, which was the date of one of the most tragic railway accidents in Latvian history. And at that time, you had a collision between two trains in the station of Jūgla, which is northeast Riga, where this passenger train traveling at high speed from St. Petersburg to Riga crashed into a locomotive that was driving in other direction. And as a result, it led to the death of 46 people and more than 60 injuries. So at that time, the reason for this was that the track technologies were not as good as they were today, and specifically in the specific station of Jugla, you did not have any automatic systems that would regulate the movement of the trains, and the station itself, situated on a slight bend, was not fully observable in its totality, meaning that it did require a lot of work, and it was very difficult to organize when you had people who had to go from the one side of the station to the other. You also had to communicate over the radio and speak in different languages, and not necessarily all of the people involved spoke all of the languages that were used in this communication, and it was all made much worse by the cold weather and snow, which made one of the tracks unusable, and required some manual changes in the order of the trains that come in and stay in the station, which was not coordinated enough. One of the persons involved did these switches and forgot that there would be a passenger train coming in, and as a result those two trains crashed and people died.
Very, very sad situation, and luckily we have many advances in modern technology when it comes to signaling and everything like that to prevent these situations. But unfortunately, you still always do have to be careful, with trains and at train crossings, obviously, because there are.
Yes. Certainly now we are very glad that lessons have been learned from this. Mm-hmm. Now our country can boast one of the best security records if we talk about the train services, including the automated controls and also the number of accidents that have happened recently.
Well, that's for the sad news of, the sad thing to remember in Latvian history. But what is one happier thing which we can remember from the 15th of February, 1922?
That's right. And on this date, we have to remember that the Constitution of Latvia, also known as Satversme, was approved. So this is one of the most important dates for our country. And that is very important to remember, not only for students of law or students in schools, but also those of our listeners who are residents of Latvia and would plan to apply for the Latvian citizenship. That is one of the first things that you have to know, because the Constitution, or Satversme, is our most important law.
Yes, and if you are studying for Latvian citizenship, there is that test, as Otto mentioned, and if you need help with that, you can write to us also, because we can hopefully maybe help out with that as well. There's many things we can help out with. we're not great for relationship advice. No, that's not the best. Or where to invest in Wall Street or anything like that. But we can advise on some things, Latvia related things.
Sure.
Yeah. But we love to hear from you. Please, go to the Latvia Weekly Facebook page. You can like us there. Again, thanks to Keen and Andrew for starting up the stories of the day. Once again, and also, if you are so kind, it would be great if you could tell your friends about us. If you have friends who are interested in Latvia and what's happening here and want to hear about it in English, then tell your friends about this show as well. It's the more the merrier. But Otto, what do you think? Will we be back a week from now talking about what happens next week?
Oh, yes. So, as we can see for this week, the cold weather will be here, and it will be here for quite a while. But after the turn of the week, so beginning of the new week after this, the temperatures will get slightly warmer, so it will get closer to 0 degrees. So, probably, if you have the chance to to enjoy this very wintry winter that we have and haven't had for a number of years, please do that this week and on this weekend, because it is more likely than not that we will get back to the melting and refreezing pavements and issues like that next week. And something that we have to be careful about, the same goes also for icicles and this melting snow that is coming from the roofs. So enjoy the winter so that we can get as much of it as we can.
Yeah. So basically, don't let winter kill you. You know, as we mentioned at the top of the show, you know, it's not just walking across the ice that can be dangerous here. So do you know, keep your eyes peeled for all the things that Otto just mentioned, and we will be keeping our eyes peeled as well for what happens here in Latvia, and be ready to discuss it with you a week from now. So until then, take care, everyone, and visu labu.
Visu labu.